Hello, friends. Today is the 28th of April, 2014, and the sun is in Taurus and the moon is in Taurus, and we're in the balsamic phase of that lunation cycle. And I didn't think I would be talking to you right now. But you know, these have been peculiar times following the conference. There's so much going on in the sky. The Grand Cross is causing great distress, I think, to many. And it's a question of when certain ideas come to you. And when these ideas come, and maybe more importantly, the realizations that come with the ideas, one wants to write them down. So, you know, I have my little red book, many incarnations of the little red book. It's not like Mao's red book. I also have little black books. They're all the same. And I write my ideas as they come. And some of them I wish to share with you. So this could be called then Adventures in Identification number 3. I think I have already produce some different series of talks or reflections or just spontaneous sharings with you. And I've called them Adventures in Identification number 1 and number 2. Today, well, it was one of those days when it seemed like any kind of breakthrough was most unlikely. The kinds of breakthroughs I'm interested in are those in the field of consciousness that make one more aware of not only the nature of things, but the fact that things exist at all. I've sometimes said, you know, it's not what you are, but that you are at all. The miracle is before us all the time, regardless of its quality. Good and bad don't belong to this perception. Of course, in line with our original intent as the reappearing universal logos, we do seek to promote our own will, which is the good. It is cosmos. It is that which we intend. We, as the one archetypal being facing the possibility of expressing creatively some content within our nature. But what I'm talking about here is in a way beyond relativity. It's beyond good and evil. Maybe not in the Nietzschean sense, but in the philosophical sense, it is beyond good and evil. It is about that-ness and this-ness and their equivalence. You know, in the ancient Upanishads, we have the simple statement tat tvam asi. Thou art that. And it is said that the contents of 10,000 books are all meant to elucidate that simple statement. But of course, the statement can be repeated forever, and yet we will not come to the realization. The realization is what is important. How does this realization come? Well, that is the training that we must undergo when we seek to move from the realm of quality into the realm of being. We are much preoccupied with determining the quality of things according to dualities, triplicities, septenates, the seven rays, for instance. And we would like to assign all perceivables, whether exterior or interior, to the realm of those differentiated divisions we call qualities. And there is much merit in doing so, because in this way we can organize our perception of the world, or in fact discover the manner in which the world is divinely organized. And from the chaos of our previous understanding, we can enter a kind of a divine cosmos and understand how the divine mind, which is really our mind, laid out its creation, presented its creation, of course, to itself. There's none else to whom to present it. There is none else. It's a self-presentation. It's a self-reflection, but it is organized, and we want to know the manner of the organization. But there are, and I spend so much of my life dealing with exactly those issues, how the contents of consciousness, because that's all there really are, depends on the scope of the consciousness, but all there, anything, is a content of consciousness, at least in my view, how these contents of consciousness are apportioned, how they are organized, how they are related, how they act upon each other, and move together towards some sort of marvelous archetypal consummation, which is far, far ahead of our realization. Of course, as I like to say, we are the graduates of infinitudinous universes. In fact, we are, have been, infinitudinous universes. So whatever stage we're going through at the moment, we have been through infinitudinous times. There's so many paradoxes in such statements as those. But we are not new to the scene. We are older than old and newer than new. We have been around forever in timeless time. The use of magical words, I talked about this at the conference recently, not necessarily the sanctioned words of hierarchy, which are scientific in their nature, and which pertain to the activation of various types of forces and energies, of which we as man are only beginning to gather some understanding. The use of such words will come as our scope of responsibility increases within our growing sphere of influence, and when there is a need for the manipulation of substances and their dimensions according to the divine plan. All in good time. All in good timeless time. I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about something that anyone who has a spiritual inclination can do. I'm talking about the creation of individualized words, or individual words, which are an open sesame to states of consciousness which are looming just beyond our normal apprehension. I think we get sudden impressions from those states, and we would like to render them more frequent appearances and stabilize them so that they are continuities in our consciousness. We are always looking for the next state of apprehension, the next state of sensitivity, the next state of deeper understanding. And many will have various ways of achieving this. I recall that the great English poet Alfred Lord Tennyson, it is said, used to repeat his name to himself, and maybe it was Alfred. Maybe he, through this, learned that he actually existed, that the I was real, that he was a true being. People have different ways, through the imagination, through action, through art, through nature. There are many ways to bring into consciousness the next imminent apprehension, which should be ours. I've kind of chosen this method of meaningful mantrams, if you will, mantrams that mean something to the individual making them. Very simple words which can be sounded and which evoke a different state of consciousness. Perhaps that state of consciousness comes upon you and you think of the words that embody it. I joked at the conference where the Tibetan has a great a mantram for the second ray, naught is but me. Sometimes I just take the first letter of the words, nib me. I could say nibm, but it's easier to add the e at the end. Naught is but me, nib me, nib me. And when I use that, either in its full or in its abbreviated form, the realization begins to dawn that that is so. Naught is but me. It's such a radical statement, if you think. I joked. I was taking a walk with my youngest son, and we were talking about this. He's of a strongly philosophical inclination, and I was talking about the idea of identification, and He said, "Dad, even the asphalt?" Because we were looking down at some newly laid tar. And I said, "Yes, even the asphalt. Naught is but me." I register this in the heart when it occurs. It's a sudden gelling of realization. And it seems to involve the heart center, at least for me. Maybe other centers are involved. I'm somewhat new to the exploration. This exploration leads one to the realization of isolated unity, and that is the prerogative of the fifth degree initiate. Maybe that's even just the beginning. So I'm not pretending to understand anything of the fullness of isolated unity. But I think that some of these methods which promote identification are along the correct line of revelation. Probably some of you are noticing that I'm talking slower than I actually usually do. That's a mercy, isn't it? That's because I have to think as I go. And for so much of the other teaching, it's already, you know, more or less built in, so Mercury in Aries gets the better of me and I rattle along, but here I'm thinking every step of the way and trying to find the method of formulation which will be useful in presenting what I would like to present. The words of power associated with certain work we have to do are know, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. Well, knowing and expressing are extremely important, and we have to spend our lives knowing evermore and expressing all that we know, and then comes the idea of revelation. And our coming into rapport with that which always is. The revelation is always of that which ever is. And it came to me, you know, reveal the one. So how does one reveal the one if one does not know the one? But one is beginning to know the one, and in the process of revealing the one, one will get to know the one ever more fully. So I come up with these words which mean something to me. They may not mean anything to anyone else, but if they can induce in me a certain state of consciousness or awareness which was not there before, then they will have serve their purpose. I have all kinds of words. Some of them are really nonsensical. Others of them seem to say something. I have thousands of these words. Some of them are really evocative in my consciousness, but they fade and new ones come in, and it always seems like there is behind the creation of these words a demanding consciousness which wants to become ever more sensitive to that which it is. So notebooks and notebooks pile up, and sometimes I forget my best words. The old saying, you know, a word to the wise is sufficient. I try to find those words which carry a little wisdom in them. And sometimes, you know, you would wonder why, when you have the statement, thou art that, why should one try to produce anything else? But there's all these different aspects to the fundamental realization. It's a spherical type of realization. Every point on the sphere, of which there are infinitudinous, needs to be seen, or the perspective needs to be taken from every point on the limitless sphere. You know, we hear of it, its center is everywhere and its circumference is nowhere. There are, you know, paradoxes involved here. And this evening, you know, I'm sitting, thou art that, okay. Also, thou art it. Thou art I am it. These seem like the most simple-minded first grade type of formulations, but perhaps we are actually entering the first grade in some larger curriculum. Tai, tai, ei, I say to myself. Tai, tai, ei. Thou art it. It is closer to this than that. That is a little remote and speaks of the ultimate. Thou art I. And I am it, whatever it may be. These are disciplines in the art of identification. They may seem so simple-minded, but then, you know, simplicity is something that needs to be achieved by many of us who have been complex in the mind, and he talks about the learned aspirant, Master D.K. does, and how simplicity is needed. The thing that I'm after here is to look at anything, any presentation to consciousness, any content of consciousness, because that's all things really are, and realize them, as Master D.K. says, as externalizations of the one infinite being. He talks about harmlessness. You know, harmlessness is the expression of the life of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere, who lives consciously as a soul, to whom all forms are alike, and that they veil and hide the light and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. It's that one infinite being, or some meaningful reduction of it, because I don't fool myself that the wholeness of apprehension is possible to this tiny emanation that I call myself. I'm sure that that emanation called the solar logos has a much deeper and more living, more vital, more real and true apprehension of the one infinite being. And perhaps in universe, as I've sometimes said, apprehension of the one infinite being is not even possible. It's as if a tremendous gulf exists between the universal one and the infinity of all infinities, and yet they are the same. But a tremendous gulf in terms of realization may exist. So when I consider we human beings and the tiny microscopic emanations that we are of the One, I do not presume that our apprehension or realization of being will be the same or as intense or as real as realizations further up the emanative stream. I mean, to talk, you know, in these terms, obviously, we're not really talking about realities. We are using some form of words to approach a sense of a deeper reality. Well, I remember once I was maybe 40 years ago in an atomic energy plant. It was a nuclear power generator, and I was there with my wonderful uncle, who is scientific in his nature. And I was in one of my mystical states of consciousness, and I devised a mantra. Because, you know, in a way I had no interest in what I was seeing. It seemed like the furthest thing from my own sort of quasi-artistic, operatic nature. But I slipped into that state when I realized the vital meaningfulness of everything and something of its essential sameness. And I used a phrase, all and everything. All and everything. And I applied that over the years when I wanted to try to understand the that of things rather than the whatness of things. I didn't want to understand quality. I wanted to come directly in contact with being. Of course, even in the realm of quality, it's important. Everything is significant. Everything signifies. It all points to the one, and everything has its place in the content of our consciousness. But sometimes when I use that phrase now, 40 years later, all and everything, I can grasp that all difference can be resolved into the perception of one substance, one substratum, which really cannot be defined because it is qualityless. It is, in a way, the only thing that is, and it's indivisible. So it is difficult to talk about it in comparison with anything else because there isn't anything else. So, all and everything is one of my watch words, key words to experience reality, to experience myself as reality, to experience all things as reality. And everything and all, of course, I can reverse that. Combinations and permutations, you know, how the third ray works. It turns everything in every direction until you see all possible combinations and permutations. And then, you know, today I came up with like AAA, you know. I just call it ah. A-A-A. For me, it's ah. And which kind of happily goes along with the kind of realization that comes through the use of it, and it means anything at all. Ah, anything at all. This does not mean that I do not, in another state of my mind, recognize the qualities of anything and their interrelation with other things in this cosmos I call the contents of my consciousness. I think I do, and increasingly do, but the beginning is ah. Ah. Maybe I could just carry that out. Ah, or even on a tone. Just carry it out. Maybe sound it on different pitches, perhaps. Eventually that will be possible, and all the different notes of the right frequency will have their specific revelations, but I'm not interested in the specific at the moment. I guess I'm just a bit of a mad generalist at the moment. I will return to the realm of quality, of course. But this realm of being fascinates me at the moment, all and everything. And I neutralize anything I see, anything whatsoever, on whatever plane or experience, and inclusion, all those things in the realization of the one substance, the all in the one, the everything as the one, the all as the one. Ao, A-A-O, all as one. I think, write that one down. I mean, I'm sure it's in my book somewhere here. It's because it's like too obvious not to have been discovered and rediscovered. All as one. And we can even say all as none, an. All as none, or at least as the no thing, ant. The idea here is to take the multifarious presentations to consciousness and find their essence, which is being itself. Now, it may seem so obvious that it's not even worth considering, but maybe it's not all that obvious, and maybe we are not awake to the immediate miracle before us. Every appearance is an appearance of the miraculous. The miraculous is the one and only substance, the one and only no thing. I say substance because I mean it stands under all things. There are some simple words, this, that, it. These are almost primitive words to indicate initial perceptions of otherness. Otherness from one's own identified nature. When the human being is individualized and begins, after maybe some millions of years, to come to himself, recognizing a distinct self, distinct from the other contents of consciousness, he uses the word I. And then usually a word like this or that or it points to something which is other than what he has recognized himself to be. But I use these words in a different way. So when I say to myself this, or it, there's an immediate fusing which occurs in my consciousness. And all the this's and the it's, even the that, but I reserve that maybe for another thing, they begin to come together in some vast inclusion. They are linked together in a continuity of being. this and this and this and this and this and this and this. I joked at the conference, you know, I said to the people, I said, ay, 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 you and you and all, and you and you and all. And this and you and all. Ataya. Fusing, perhaps under Neptune, you know, it is in a way the, for our second-ray solar system, the most powerful planet at this time, because not only do we have the second-ray soul, we have the second-ray personality in our solar logos at this time, and probably, ultimately, the second-ray monad transitioning from the fourth to the second, retaining the fourth probably, but transitioning ultimately, or revealing ultimately the second, the great 222. So maybe, you know, this fusion operates under the planet Neptune to a degree. Sometimes, of course, Uranus can strike and something stands out with utter clarity. But I'm interested at the moment in the fusion. I am the one, I God. I am the form in which all forms are merged. I am the soul in which all souls are fused. I am the life, and in that life, all little lives remain. Well, that is from that ancient Atlantean formula, which gives us a powerful sense of oneness. And I'm sure that in this fusing, blending, merging process, which does not keep you from being a practical person in the world. You can do that too, but underlying it all is the realization of the fusing and the blending that is given to us, in our solar system at least, through the higher quality of Neptune with its second ray monad. I want to say, you know, for all my friends, that although I use the third ray constantly, for me the second ray is where it's at. But of course even that is a quality and a limitation, and when you're dealing with being, it can't be first ray, second ray, third ray, none of that. Those are qualities. It has to be the very essence of those rays, or the essence of anything. So when I say to myself, this, you, and you, and you, and you, and this, and this, and this, and it. I am performing a discipline in identification. Very subtle thing, seemingly nonsense. You know, if you don't know this from that, what are you doing? But I don't want to know this from that. I want to know this as that. Tat, 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 tat. This as that. This as that. This as that. A little bit hypnotic, okay, but it induces a certain state of realization that the great that, the suchness of the Buddha, the thatness, the be-ness, that this, any specificity that I see before my eyes or any of my other senses is that. This as that, this as that, this as that. I don't even have to say it. I can say tat, tat, tat. And it comes pretty close to thou art that too, doesn't it? The this and the thou and the that, they're all the same. Of course, we can talk till we're blue, and if it doesn't impress us, as really identical, then we're just talking. Identicality is the key. Identicality. The search for the substratum than which there is none other, so you really don't have to search, except that in this emanative state where the one has reduced its self-perception incrementally, producing emanation through reduced self-perception, in that state we have to regain the sense of substance we have lost. Of course, from another perspective, that which I am has not lost it at all, because although this little emanation, which I call myself, is, what I say, dimensionally sealed from all other emanations, one day it won't be. And I will realize that even as I hear in this Prakritic immersion, I call it, this immersion into matter, which is just a state of myself, this Prakritic immersion may seem to blind me, but even while I am dimensionally sealed and blinded from other higher perceptions, they are going on and they are mine. They are mine. The whole thing is mine. This is it. My old teacher, you know, I can hardly think of him without being moved. He knew it. And as I've sometimes said, well, he had five or six planets in Pisces and Leo rising. So if you don't know about identification with that kind of combination, you're not going to. And he taught me, by example, what identification was, is. So I'm very grateful. I mean, some little impression came through, and that it would be the search of my entire life for the nature of identification, identicality, the this as that, the that as I, the that as thou, the thou as that, the only thing, or non-thing, the only, I'll avoid the thing word, the only, that would be the very substance of my life, this life, the experience, the self-reflection of this tiny microscopic emanation ever moving up along the emanative stream. So, my goal, speaking then, you know, in smaller relative personal terms, is to see all things, all thises as that, all its as the only, and to see them all fused together, identical, regardless of apparent difference, that the group see or know there are no other selves, let the group know there is no color, only light, and then let darkness take the place of light, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. Well, that's rule 9, you know, in the rules for group work. I'm always amused that people come along and say, oh, well, the Tibetan has been superseded, now we have some new presentation of the teaching, the Tibetan is passé. Wow. When I think of these rules and how difficult it is to assimilate them, well, The Tibetan, as a great messenger of the ageless wisdom, is not passé. And what he has presented in his profound revelations has not been assimilated. But you know, there is a great comfort, maybe of a spiritual kind. Are you supposed to avoid that in Scorpio? Well, I don't know, a great peace. When you can look at anything or anyone and realize the identicality as the substratum, this as that. Many ways to pronounce it, tat, 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 ta, 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 ta. Whatever evokes for you the realization in your heart, in the heart in your head, in some aspect of your consciousness, the realization of the all-pervading One, which nothing can escape. I use the word is. Well, it's a good word for being. And I also called it, at the conference, inescapable suchness. Inescapable suchness. And I also used the word it. Inescapable that-ness. The idea or the realization that whatever this subtle thing, subtlest of all, qualityless, is, ultimately it is inescapable even if we don't know it. We don't realize its inescapability. It is, after all, what we are forever. But this does take practice in our own little relative sphere. It is a meditation. It is a yoga. I don't know what I should call it. You know, the yoga of identification? Y-O-I? I'll think of some name for it, some abbreviation for it, so that I can use it, you know. But I'm involved, simply because of the pressure within this little emanation, driven towards the yoga of identification. Maybe it's part of Raja Yoga, part of Agni Yoga. For me, it is the one consuming objective. Of course, I increase my knowledge. I try to understand deeply the science of esotericism, the science of occultism. I know I'm just a beginner there. You know, in terms of time, which only appears to exist because of the necessity of observing sequence, because of our tininess, in terms of time, it will take a long time before what a master knows, I know, this little emanation, and a long time before what he knows is as what a planetary logos knows, and on and on and on, and yet it's all the merest cipher. I mean, no thing has its own being, or independent being anyway. It has being, and the being is always identical. Everything is the no thing. Every specificity is really a zero in the no-thing sense. So I know that in terms of understanding the science of occultism, and I think many of us are involved in doing that, it's going to take a while, you know, in terms of time, even though when we add up those dimensionless points of time, we may get no time at all, and when we add up dimensionless points of space, we'll get no space at all. We will discover that time and space really are illusions, but are necessary illusions, or at least are actual. They are illusions in actuality, and we have the habit of generating them forever, for whatever reason, beyond the knowledge of such little emanations as we are, or such, rather than call them little, I should call them attenuated. We are greatly attenuated emanations, but there are emanations beneath us that have still greater attenuation. It seems to me that the objective here is to make up your own methods of evoking the One, evoking substance, evoking suchness, evoking thatness, evoking the realization of the substratum. It's so easy to forget. It's so easy for the veil to fall, of course, at our particular stage. But every once in a while, there's a clearing. And the thatness, which is God, appears. And we realize that it's amazing that anything should be at all. I remember my son was going to write a thesis. I wonder if I got it correctly. It's about whether why anything should be rather than not be. It was then I realized that we must have been two old pre-Socratic philosophers taking up the threads of some old conversations. To be or not to be? Well, that's about whether you live in the world or you die, but, you know, in the Hamlet sense, but from our philosophical perspective, there's no choice but to be. There is a choice whether to exist as a thing, an existence. But being cannot be removed. It is indeed inescapable. And the more we can summon this sense of being, no matter what we may be doing, thinking, no matter how we may be engaged in quality, in differentiation, if this pervasive sameness underlies and, well, pervades every possible action, movement in this world of contents of consciousness, then something absolutely fundamental has been added to the customary veiled nature of our consciousness. In shared sameness, we are one, and thou art I. I've been working on that one for a while. These are like, you know, seed thoughts for me. In shared sameness, we are one, and thou art I. It comes out of a strange formulation. Iswawatai. Iswawatai. It sounds like some strange Atlantean language. But it reminds me, in shared sameness, we are one, and thou art I. And I wait then. I say it, I wait. And then I get that feeling in my heart. It suddenly gels, and I realize it. you know, you want to be able to realize that all the time and still be an effective, attenuated emanation. That's what we are, in one relative sense. So it's dual. The realization of non-duality is dual, in a way. Of course, there are further states when none of this language would apply. But we need stepping stones. You know, whatever works for you, whatever kind of meditation works for you, you are your own Antikarana. You are your own way in. No teacher is ever going to teach you the real way in. There will be an indication of the way you should go, but the way in will be yours and yours alone. You will be a retracted emanation. You are right now a monad in extension, and you will come to your full monadic state eventually, only to realize that it is in extension and an attenuation from a still greater source. Well, just about there. I just had this urge to talk to you, to talk to me tonight. If I talk to me, I talk to you, right? Had this urge to do that. I was so sleepy in my relative being. Coming home from the conference, it's just been a wipeout. But something has been growing. You know, all this time of the higher interlude for me, the sense of the unity, the sense of the one being. God is the Lord, for A stands firm. Being exists alone, naught else is. That sense has been growing. It always grows for me in the higher interlude. Then I try to find ways of applying it at other times of the year. So responding to the instruction, reveal the one, well, you know, know the one, be the one, reveal the one. Kato, bato, rito. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I realize that my method may be a little faltering, because I'm not relying too much on script here. I'm not relying upon a highly organized talk like I oftentimes do, always too long, but I'm not relying upon that. I'm relying upon something quite different, which I can only hope and anticipate will grow. As I penetrate into the ever-present one with ever deeper intensities of realization. And, of course, I feel compelled to share it with you, with me, with you, I, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and me, and me, and me. I feel compelled to share it in the hope of inducing that connectedness, which is always there, the realization of that connectedness, and not only of the connectedness, which is unity, but of the sameness. For me, sameness is a holy word. Shared sameness. Isuawatai. It's a holy word, because it dissolves the basis of illusion, which is perceived difference. So even as my mind tends to go more and more into particularities, to understand the details of the ageless wisdom, simultaneously with that is shared sameness and the appreciation of the profundity of sameness. You'll have to work on it your own way. I'm just sharing with you how it works for me. Okay, friends, one little om, and I'll send this out to you. bizarre little program, I'm sure, but you'll have it. And we'll see when the urge to speak further about these things will come upon relative me, and then we'll continue with Adventures in Identification number 3. So until then, we'll be seeing you, we'll be seeing me, we'll be being. Be you then.